out there. I'm still in Portland, Oregon. 5 weeks to go until I head to Southern California and start my through hike of the Pacific Crest Trail. This is Ratatouille, and you're listening to Trailside Radio.
The PCT, I was hoping I was going to make it through Washington. I had no idea that I could do it. And every mile, really, I was still impressed. I was like, wow, I got that done. I'm here. And when I got to the end of the Pacific Crest Trail, I was just blown away. I was like, wow, I can do this. I just did that. I just walked the Pacific Crest Trail.
I felt at home. When I was by myself, I just felt like it was holding me. And it just welcomes the hiker, and it's a very wide open trail that you can just walk on, and it embraces you. It's not trying to hurt you in any way, and you can just stretch your legs and go on the PCT.
Welcome back, everybody. I've had a big couple of weeks since episode one. I've got a lot of great feedback from the first episode. Last month, I attended a backpacking clinic in Cascade Locks, Oregon. It was hosted by the ALDA West, the American Long Distance Hiking Association West. It was a great event. A lot of different experienced hikers were there offering wisdom. Met a lot of people there, including folks that you'll hear on this podcast. Earlier this month, I went down to the Laurelhurst Theater and attended the Portland premiere of a movie called Flip Flop Flipped, which is the latest film by Squatch, who makes some great hiking movies. And this was the last in his series about the Appalachian Trail. Really enjoyed it. More recently, I made a trip down to the town of Bend in central Oregon. I went down there to interview a number of people for Trailside Radio. Most of those interviews you're going to hear in the next episode. But I'm going to kick things off with one of the interviews I got while I was down there. I met with Sage Clegg, who is a really awesome hiker. We met up at Crux Brewery, which is in the Old Mill District there in Bend, not far at all from the Deschutes River, also not far from the highway, and I challenged myself to see how well I could record an interview in a noisy environment, and you're about to hear the results of that. Sage, like my other guest in this episode, Wired, has earned her triple crown. And for those of you that don't know what that is, that's an award given to people who have hiked all three of the major long-distance trails in the United States. The Pacific Crest Trail on the West Coast, the Appalachian Trail on the East Coast, and the Continental Divide Trail right smack in the middle. Without further ado, here is my interview with Sage Clegg.
All right, I am sitting down here with Sage Clegg, triple crowner and trailblazer extraordinaire, from what I understand. When did you first get into hiking long distances?
Back in 2008, I got laid off of two jobs within 2 months and kind of didn't know what to do with myself. And my good friend Pepper said, "You just need an adventure in your life, Sage." And it was mid-November, and I was like, "Well, I want to go for a hike." And he's like, "Well, you need a desert hike. How about the Grand Enchantment Trail?" And I looked into it. It looked like an awesome trail. Starts in Albuquerque, ends in Phoenix. And I was able to download the maps off the internet and print them out and headed out on to my first through hike. I hitched out to Albuquerque and started walking. I had 1 month to be able to walk, and that 1 month did me wonders. Like 3 days into it, I decided that it was my 29th birthday, 3 days into my hike, and I decided that by the time I turned 30, I wanted to hike 3,000 miles, and so I did. And I had that first 30 days on the Grand Enchantment Trail, and then I came off the trail, went home, worked, and got myself ready for a southbound hike of the PCT in 2009. So I started on that on July 1st of 2009. That really solidified my excitement about through hiking, and yeah, by the time I was done with that, it was all over. There's no going back. I was pretty addicted to hiking.
Now, you hiked all three of the main trails, the main long-distance trails in the U.S., the Triple Crown, in 18 months. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct. So I started out with that southbound through hike of the PCT in 2009, and then I took my winter to kind of recuperate, and I actually had a pretty horrible knee injury and hip injury after my PCT hike. I went out to try to finish the Grand Enchantment Trail. I totally ruined my knee on my 30th birthday and had to come off, and did months of physical therapy. Went and I work as a tortoise biologist down in the Mojave Desert. So I finished my tortoise season early, hitched a ride out to the beginning of the Continental Divide Trail, and had my dad fly out. He drove me down in a rental car the rest of the way, dropped me off on the border, and then I started hiking northbound on the Continental Divide. And that was in mid-May that I started on the Continental Divide, finished up the Continental Divide in the last week of August. And I had told myself that if I was going to, I knew I wanted to hike the Appalachian Trail southbound, and I knew I wanted to hike it in the fall because I wanted to see the East Coast fall colors. I figured probably wouldn't be so crowded, and maybe that would be more my cup of tea. So I finished by the last week of August. That was my deadline. If I'd finished later than that, I would have scrapped my whole AT plan. But from the end of the CDT, I wound up going out to Maine and starting my Appalachian Trail southbound through hike on the 14th of September, and finished up on the 24th of December. So that was my 18 months.
Now, was that the game plan when you started on the PCT? Did you anticipate doing all three of those in that time period?
Absolutely not. I had no idea. When I started the PCT, I was hoping I was going to make it through Washington. I had no idea that I could do it. And every mile, really, I was still impressed. I was like, wow, I got that done. I'm here. And when I got to the end of the Pacific Crest Trail, I was just blown away. I was like, wow, I can do this. I just did that. I just walked the Pacific Crest Trail. And same thing with the Continental Divide Trail. I mean, I got all the way up to Canada on the Continental Divide Trail, and I still really wasn't sure if I should keep going or if I could keep going. And about 2 weeks into the Appalachian Trail, after I'd gone through a couple of moments of like, why am I on this trail? This trail's freaking me out. I felt claustrophobic. I really didn't like it. But I decided I just was gonna, if I was gonna do it, it was gonna have to be then. And then I looked at my calendar and realized that I'd been hiking a whole lot in the last year. And that if I finished that trail, the Appalachian Trail, by New Year's, by the end of the year, it would have all been within 18 months. And it kind of hit me then that I was on track for this 18-month Triple Crown. I had no idea until I was well into Vermont that that's what I was doing. So
that's a very elite club there for listeners who are not familiar. It's the Triple Crown is an elite enough accomplishment, but very few people do it in that time frame. Now, you've gotten into doing some less traditional long-distance trails, some newer trails, and some ones that you've helped develop yourself. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Sure. Yeah, so after I got done with the Appalachian Trail in 2010, I came home and had that post-trail depression that so many of us get to go through, and I was just kind of thinking about what I like about hiking, and what I like about hiking is getting to go places on my own, of my own accord. And I grew up in Northern California, and I've lived in California most of my life, and I really, really enjoy the state a whole lot. And I really enjoy walking there, and I wanted to make a route across California to highlight the places that I love so much and to go revisit some of those favorite little nuggets. So I spent my winter just creating a route, and my concept was to go from where I grew up on the north coast of California. I decided to start at Cape Mendocino, which is the furthest point west in California, and I really wanted to be able to go across and down the Yolaboy mountain range, which is the mountain range that I grew up going out to when I was a kid, and then crossing the northern central valley and up into the Sierras and following the Pacific Crest Trail and the Tahoe Rim Trail and the Sierra High Route, kind of an amalgamation of all of them, all the way to Mount Whitney. And then from Mount Whitney, I decided that, well, why stop at Mount Whitney when you can go to Death Valley? So I decided to add in the low to high route and went from that nice high point of Mount Whitney all the way down to Badwater in Death Valley following the low to high route. It was great. It was really cool. It was fun to plan the route. It was really enjoyable to hike the route. My boyfriend, Adam, who I'd met about a month and a half before the start of the trail, decided to come with me on the hike, and it was his first through hike, and it was really cool to be able to bring somebody who I love into this through hiking thing that I love and had done solo for so long. To finally have a hiking partner was huge. It was great. And it was also awesome to be able to walk a route of my own invention, and it was just as cool as I was hoping it would have been. So,
what is the total distance of that route?
I think it's around 1,200 miles. It's hard to say. I have the mileage because I drew the route onto the maps, and I made a map set for it. But it's pretty crude. It's not exactly refined or anything, and I didn't take a track log on that route. I usually do not hike with a GPS, and I just like walking with a map and compass. So unfortunately on that route I didn't take a track log, and it's gonna be a little bit till I can refine those maps and get them out there for other people to be able to use.
What's your favorite part of pioneering your own trails?
Well, I think one of my favorite parts about it is that I get to have the ultimate freedom. I get to choose where I want to go. I get to walk where I want to walk. No trail, no blazes are telling me where to go. No trail culture is telling me where to go. I just get to create all of that all on my own. And it's incredibly satisfying. It's really nice to have that need met. I just get to be free and walk whatever way I want. If I have to reroute, no big deal. If there's a fire in the way, whatever. I get to come up with a creative solution, and it's a totally fine. And I get to see all my favorite places, which can't go wrong, right? So it's great.
Two other trails that you've hiked that I think most people aren't familiar with, that I wasn't until recently, one of which is the Oregon Desert Trail. Do I understand you were one of the first people to hike that? Tell me about that trail.
Well, the Oregon Desert Trail was created by a nonprofit here in Bend. It's about, well, my hike of it was around 800 miles. I think the official mileage of the route is around 750 or so. Anyway, this nonprofit here in Bend, Oregon Natural Desert Association, came up with this idea to create a route that connects the dots of all these wilderness study areas, so potential wilderness areas, throughout southeastern Oregon. And the trail starts right here in Bend. I had just moved to Bend, and I was really curious about what my new home had to provide and wanted to get to know my new home a little bit better. So for me, when I found out about the Oregon Desert Trail, my friend Jeremy, who inventoried much of the Oregon Desert Trail for Onda, he was paid by them to go out and lead volunteer trips and inventory these sections of the Oregon Desert Trail. He mentioned this trail, and I was like, oh my God, there's a trail from Bend? Okay, sign me up, you know, how do I do this? And when he mentioned that, well, nobody's ever actually thru-hiked it before, and it's a brand new trail, I was like, well, you know, I've done that before. I've made my own trail. It was fine. It was cool. I loved it. I feel totally confident that as long as you give me some good resources, I can make that happen. And so we started chatting, and Onda decided that they wanted to have me hike the trail, and we worked together, and I volunteered for them and walked hiked their new trail. And it was really exciting to get to see places that I knew hadn't necessarily been connected on foot maybe for thousands of years. I'm sure that back in the day when it was just a bunch of people and no roads yet, that people used to walk this route relatively frequently. Maybe it was a little straighter. The Oregon Desert Trail goes like, it looks like a squiggly line across eastern Oregon. It's a little nonsensical sometimes, but it goes over about 9 mountain ranges and through the basins in between, and then 200 miles down the Owyhee Canyon, and it's great. It's just so cool to get to see so many different facets of this place that I think most people think of as a wasteland or don't know what's out there. And it's really full of some amazing gems and full of some solid monotony in between.
Now, the other trail that I hadn't heard of until this week is the Bigfoot Trail. What's the story on that one?
Well, the Bigfoot Trail is a relatively new route. It was created by Michael Kaufman, who is a tree botanist. He specializes in conifers. And he created this route across Northern California and a little bit of Southern Oregon. It's about 400-ish miles, maybe 350. Again, my hike of it was just over 400 miles. The official mileage of the route is around 360, I think. And he made this route. It goes past 32 different species of conifer along the way. So it's the ultimate trail for a botany geek such as myself. And I really didn't know my trees very well before the trail. Decided that I was going to carry a guidebook, a field guide, on the trail. I never carry books on the trail, but this time I did. I carried 8 ounces of a field guide, and it was well worth it. I learned a lot about trees. I got to see my childhood home in a whole different light, getting to walk the roller coaster of the mountains there. It goes through, starts in the Yoloboy Mountains, which are my home mountains, goes into the Trinity Alps, through the Marble Mountain Wilderness, and then goes up into Oregon, and then back through the Siskiyou Mountains, and then eventually ends at Crescent City in Northern California. So it's a pretty fascinating trail. I don't know. It goes through, I'll talk a little bit more about it. It goes through 6 wilderness areas and a national monument, the way that I took an alternate to a national monument, and a national park. So it hit some gems for sure. It's exciting. The route is mostly based on trail and dirt roads, but a lot of the trail hasn't seen maintenance for years and years. So at its current state, before the Bigfoot Trail Alliance gets in there and starts revamping those trails, it definitely takes a heavy navigation skill set to be able to get yourself through it. And there's a good bit of bushwhacking and stuff, but the pain versus reward ratio is pretty good. There's a lot of great views, and there's a lot of great swimming holes, and there's a lot of good reasons to go out onto the Bigfoot Trail and put yourself through all those bushwhacks. So.
And did you see a Bigfoot?
No Bigfoot. It was really hot while I was out there, so I'm pretty sure the Bigfoots were all hiding behind the waterfalls and stuff. But I definitely sensed them a handful of times, and I saw over 52 piles of bear scat along the way, and I encountered 4 bears. So the bears definitely are the spies for the Bigfoot, I'm pretty sure. They all let them know we were coming, and yep. Sasquatch remained elusive on my hike of the Bigfoot Trail.
I never thought about that. The bear sightings I've had in the wilderness have been the closest I have gotten or will ever get.
You never know. You never know.
What advice do you have for me and maybe some of the other people listening to this who are just getting ready to do their first long-distance hike?
It's a great question. I think I'm probably going to butcher the quote, but when I first started mountaineering and getting into going outside, I really liked reading this guy, Doug Robinson, and he had this awesome poem about mountaineering, and he said, to be a mountaineer, first love the mountains, and then you'll be a mountaineer. And I feel the same way about hiking. You just have to go out there and love it. It doesn't matter if you planned everything, you'll figure it out. Don't worry about it. Of course you're going to stress about it when you're packing and planning and all that stuff. It's going to feel it's going to feel hectic.
Yeah, that's
there's no way it's not going to feel hectic. But in the end, that planning and packing is not the important part. The important part is just to get yourself out there and see if you like it and throw yourself into it and just go after it. Get after it. And if you don't get it all done, it's okay. No one ever gets it all done. If they do, I mean, maybe there's a couple people out there that get it all done and know exactly how to pack, but I'm certainly not one of them, and I've made it a lot of miles, and it's never been a problem. I'm a disaster sometimes. It's okay to be a disaster. You'll figure it out. If you love it enough, the trail will come to you, and you'll get to keep walking it.
Do you keep a blog or online journal of your adventures?
When I first started, I kept a post-holer journal, and over the years, I've gradually kind of stopped journaling while I'm on the trail, but I do have a website, and I try to make blog posts every now and then about my adventures, and I also have been trying to make some videos that hopefully will be helpful to people that are either just starting out through hiking or starting out backpacking and want some new ideas on how to make some of their own gear, how to pack their own backpack, or what kind of whatever. I'm trying to do gear reviews and things like that. So I do have a website, sageclegg.com. Come check it out. And if you don't find information that you're interested in, feel free to email me and I can send out some information. I have a lot of ideas. If you want my advice, it's there.
You mentioned making your own gear. What kind of gear have you gotten into making? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, when I'm cooking on the trail, I usually make my own stove. It's out of a cat food can. You can go to my website and find the video that I made about how to do it. And I also usually buy super cheap Dry Ducks rain gear and make my own rain skirt out of it. And it's a nice way to go lightweight, cost efficiently.
So what adventures do you have coming up?
Well, this summer I'm not going on any crazy big huge hikes, but I think we're going to go to Scotland and go for a little whiskey walk for 2 weeks. My boyfriend Adam Drummer gets to choose where we're going, and he mentioned Scotland, and I looked up Scotland, and turns out there's a bazillion trails all throughout Scotland, and there's whiskey there. I love whiskey. So we're going to go walk probably 150 miles or so and drink a bunch. It should be good.
That sounds like great fun. Best of luck in all your future endeavors.
Awesome. Thank you.
Now, you may have heard me in that interview admit that I'm stressing a little bit about my preparations for the trail. Sage also reassured me that that's a pretty normal thing. I have an advantage that I've done enough backpacking in my life that I've got a pretty good gear set up. A lot of the stuff that I'll be taking on the trail is the equipment that I've been using for the last few years on my hikes. So that takes some of the stress out of having to start from scratch. The biggest thing for me has been trying to plan my resupply, preparing, cooking, and dehydrating a lot of food, which I've been doing for years for my backpacking trips, but never in this quantity. So a lot of people buy their food along the way. I'll be doing a little bit of that to supplement the things that I prepare, but I'm getting most of my staple foods ready here in town, doing a lot of grains, quinoa, wild rice, and lots of different kinds of beans, and tons of vegetables. I pre-cook everything separately and dehydrate it all separately so that I can mix and match when I'm on the trail and avoid ever eating the same thing twice. Dehydrate tomato paste and roasted hot peppers for variety and bring a mixture of different spices and herbs that I can add. If you're interested in learning more about the preparation that I'm doing, I'm working on a couple of blog posts. I'll have that up hopefully in the next week or two. If you're interested in learning more about the food that I'm bringing on the trail or the equipment that I'm bringing on the trail, I will be putting that up there for people who want to see what I'm up to, especially the food, because trail food is such a big thing for me. That's how I ended up with the trail name Ratatouille last summer. Which brings me around to my very first recurring segment on this podcast, trail food. Food is such a big part of trail life that it's going to come up time and time again on this podcast. So this segment will no doubt rear its head from time to time. And what is a reoccurring segment without a theme song?
The thing about food is it's all good, but there's no food as good as trail food. Trail food!
The first installment of Trail Food comes to us from someone who appeared on episode 1 of Trailside Radio, and that would be Cupcake, PCT class of 2002.
My heated meals were primarily dinner, and I had red glop, green glop, white glop, yellow glop, and maybe one other one. And they were all instant grains of some kind, like instant rice or instant polenta, mixed with other things, sometimes instant black beans or instant split pea soup. And then I would spice it up. So I would have sort of an Indian spice, a Mexican spice, Italian spice, Thai spice, and maybe one or two other things in there. I'd have bags of these as I made them up and rehydrate them, pour boiling water in them in the Ziploc bags. So sometimes I'd put in dried garlic, dried onions, I'd put in seaweed, I'd put in actual traditional herbs and spices. And then I found these little packets in bigger Asian food things that would just be little packets of coconut oil or little packets of Asian spices, Indonesian curry or Thai curries. Those quickly became, some of those became too spicy for me, but the little packets of coconut oil were incredibly rich and yummy. And then I would usually add tuna or packets of salmon, sometimes turkey into those to make them richer, and then I'd add olive oil or sesame oil to give myself, again, more calories, more richness, more motivation to eat the amount of food I needed to eat.
The thing about food is it's all good, but there's no food as good as trail food. Trail food.
If you're listening to this episode, my next guest probably doesn't need any introduction. When I started researching the Pacific Crest Trail a few months ago and trying to determine if a podcast was something that would be even possible, if there'd be anything short of pure insanity, my research kept bringing me back to one blog, above all others, written by a hiker who uses technology to stay in touch with the outside world, and share her hikes with thousands of people around the world. That hiker is Erin Saver, better known as Wired. Her blog is called Walking with Wired, and is one of the most read hiking blogs on the internet. I started off our interview by asking her how it was that she got into blogging her hikes.
When I started, I really just wanted to do something that was going to be for my family so that they knew that I was okay each night. And I didn't even know if I was going to blog daily. I was like, maybe this will happen once a week, maybe every other week, but I just wanted them to know that I was okay. But I had started by reading blogs, and that was why I ended up on the trail. I ended up solo because I had read blogs, especially from other women who had done the trails and gave me the confidence to know that I could do it on my own. So then as I started blogging, it just became a daily thing. I thought there'd be no way that I'd be able to write every day about something. But then it just became something that I was like, wow, something actually happened today that was worth writing. And then the next day, something happened. So basically, I started blogging just because I wanted to do it for my family. Then it became a much bigger thing, and it was a way to kind of pay it forward in the same way that the other blogs had done for me.
Were there any particular blogs that inspired you?
Yes. Number one was Sticky Fingers, who she did 1,000 miles in 2010 on the PCT, and she lived in Portland. So I related to her because we were about the same age, and I was able to follow and be like, that is me. I could totally do that. And she's having a great time. She had a great personality, and it just made me want to be out on the trail and believe that I could do it too. So then I had never followed a blog before. I was not a fan of blogging. I thought it was very weird and foreign, and this was in 2010, so it really wasn't as popular as it is today. And I contacted her out of the blue, which is very random, and I thought it was just crazy to do, and she was willing to meet with me in Portland and actually talk to me about hiking and all the gear questions that somebody would have and that kind of thing, which happens so much more frequently today. But back then, like, I act like I'm talking about 30 years ago, but just, you know, within 5 years, how much things changed. It was amazing that she was able to meet with me. The other woman that I was inspired by was Rockin', who does Lady on a Rock. And I did hers because she was another person that I got to watch, and I could see that could be me. Like, I related to her, and she did such a great job with the blogging as far as being each day consistently and then doing video with the stick pick. She would walk, and I could see the trail, and I envisioned it, and it felt so real, like that I could actually hike on that. To visualize it was huge, and Rockin' did that for me. And it's really been great because now Rockin' and I are really good friends, and we've hiked a lot of the long-distance trails together and done sections together. The third one that I think a lot of people were inspired by are Cubby and Boston, which are a couple that have done the Triple Crown and beyond. And they were just two women that independently, they hike together independently, though, so they tend to overlap with groups. But I feel like they were one of the earliest blogs, especially for women, that people followed and that really connected with. And I really respect the way that they were able to do it. And they did it each day in detail, and I appreciated that. What I do want to add with these blogs that I was following back in 2010 is that these people weren't doing it for publicity, and they weren't doing it for money, and they weren't doing it because someone might recognize them someday. And I just liked that it was during that time when it was sincere and it was done in a way that people weren't trying to come up with some elaborate story or an overdramatic version of what was happening. They were factually saying what was happening, and it was still bringing me in and making it real for me. And I knew that they were doing it sincerely and that it wasn't coming for any other type of purpose that they might actually gain financially or any other way from it. So I really appreciated that. And I think that's something that is getting lost more and more today.
Mm-hmm. How does blogging affect your hiking experience?
I think that people don't realize the commitment it takes to blog. On a daily basis, in detail, it is quite a chore. And a lot of people start off blogging and very quickly decide that it's not for them. And it is a commitment. There's something to gain from it personally that I get from it that I didn't expect at all, is that for me, I felt that going on the trail was a very selfish endeavor. And I wanted to find some way, and I didn't know the blog was going to fulfill that. But at first I was doing the blogging just for my family. Then it started to fulfill that this is selfish kind of void. And the way that it's impacted my hiking is that I have to gauge that into my day as far as the timing of it. And so I do sometimes wish I wasn't blogging, because I could do what other hikers are doing as far as hike into the night and then just crash right when you get to camp, and then wake up and do it all over again. I have to know that I need that hour and a half, 2 hours each night to be able to sit down and focus and blog about it. Then also, what it has also done for me, though, in a positive aspect, is that it's given me that ability to reflect on each day, and it makes me value it that much more. So I don't think that I would normally be able to sit back and reflect on each day in the depth that I do when I blog. And it's caused me to appreciate the hike so much, and that each day and each moment, I'll start off blogging and say, nothing happened today. And then I'll be writing, and it'll turn out being an entry that was so much longer than any other entry on a day that I thought a ton of things were jammed into that day. So it really does, to look back on my day and say, wow, that happened this morning. And then to realize that these little things build up over the day and to reflect on it and then see the pictures. When I'm looking back on the pictures, it just makes me appreciate it that much more. So the blogging has really impacted me that way, that it helps me to really appreciate each day as it's coming and to look back on it and have value for each day. Even though I might have thought it was a boring day or nothing happened, I can look at it and say, wow, something did happen today and it was impactful. But I do have days where I wish I wasn't blogging and that I wish I could just let it all go. It has added, for my wiredness, it has added a level of responsibility and time commitment that doesn't help with that aspect of my personality. So knowing that I need to get something done or that something is looming almost like homework, it can feel like that at times. But then as soon as I sit down and start writing, I feel like it's for me. I'm not really doing it for anybody else. So it just feels like it's a great part of my day. And I've gotten to a point where I just love it. But there are times when I'd just rather just fall asleep or go out to eat with everybody else or talk with the other hikers, like they all be at a campsite or something, like at a campfire, and I'll have to be blogging, that kind of thing. So there is a commitment involved to it, but at the same time, it balances out for me.
Do you ever give yourself a day off from blogging when you're out there?
No, I don't, because then I think I'm just going to have to do it the next day. I like to blog each day because I never know how one day something minute might actually impact something that's coming later on. So I've learned not to skip over things. And when I look back on my own journals and I want to relive the trip for myself, I often read those and I think, wow, what's going to happen next? Like, I don't know. I really don't remember. And I'm on the edge of my seat trying to figure out what's going to happen next. But then sometimes things will come up later on and it'll seem disjointed to me if I don't have it all included. So if something comes up later that I failed to mention before, then to me it's like, oh, it's not cohesive, like there isn't that link. And I want people to feel like they're hiking with me. So if I manage to leave things out and I just skip a day, I just feel like that's important. Like each day builds on itself and there's like that whole cumulative kind of hike thing that you get from it, rather than a disjointed, okay, this week was cool, now I'm going to do the next week. This cool week was okay, but I was hungry, this part of it. But you're not getting those little details, and that's the details that make it so much more quality when you're with somebody and you're hiking with them.
What kinds of responses have you gotten from people about your blog?
That's been the biggest surprise to me in all of it, is that when I was blogging, it was all just to do it for my family. And you got to remember, this started in 2011 when blogs really weren't a big thing. And they weren't simple to do, but it was just my family. And all of a sudden, by the time I reached Big Bear, which I think Big Bear is like 200 or 300 miles in, and by the time I reached that, the inbox and the messages that I was getting was very overwhelming on the Pacific Crest Trail. And I was feeling this overwhelming sense of, I can't do this. This is a lot to take on. And the comments of what it has done for people is something it blew me away. I never expected it at all. And I've had people tell me how much it's changed their lives. It's opened up a whole world to them that they didn't know existed. And a lot of people, I've randomly come across people on trail that will walk up to me. I was hiking the John Muir Trail the year after I finished the Pacific Crest Trail. And I was out there not blogging. And I was just out there by myself. And the first night I went out, a guy walked up and he did a double take. And he's like, oh my gosh, it's wired. And he looked over and he said, I'm here because of you. And it was just shocking. And he's like, look, I got this, I got this, I got this. And if I'm correct, I think he's finishing now his third section of the PCT to complete the PCT this summer. But the comments that I get and what it's meant to people that have maybe they're not able to hike right now, or maybe they will never be able to hike, and for them to feel like they're on the trail with me and that they're actually hiking the trail along with me, they say it just has given them so much. It's like a highlight of a lot of people's day. A lot of them say they wake up to it and they read it with their coffee, and it's their way to start the day. And they're like, where did we go? What happened to us today? That kind of thing. So that's part of why I like to do it one day right after the other and get it up as soon as possible, is that I want people to really feel like they are hiking with me. And it's just been amazing, the responses that I've gotten. Sure, every once in a while, for like maybe one out of every 50, you get somebody who throws in a negative comment that would throw in, I think I got one It was this week because there's some backlash with the publicity around the Pacific Crest Trail and the Appalachian Trail. There's been a lot of publicity this year, and there's been some resistance now to publicizing the trails. And now that I'm going off to do some of the lesser known trails, there's definitely some resistance to those trails, worry that they may become more like the PCT and the AT, and that they want to keep these lesser known trails quieter. So I did get a comment this week of somebody worried that I was going to increase the traffic on the trail by publicity, like that it was going to be too much publicity for that trail and that it was going to bring too many people to it. And I understand that concern, but it also isn't my intention. It's more of just sharing it with everybody and putting it out there so that people know that other trails exist. I think there's plenty of space for all of us to hike. But yeah, the response of it's just been amazing. There's one quote that I carry with me on that I always have with me on my phone that was like one that I got early on from a blog follower. And I'm going to look it up and see if I can get it real quick up on the phone. But this one quote that I got early on when I was hiking was one that I've always kept on my phone. And I don't know why it impacted me so much, but I think it was because one of the ones that I got very early on. And it was one of the first ones that let me know that this blog really does impact people and the ripple effects that it has on people. So this was from somebody that had written me a lengthy email about how difficult life had been for them lately. And so in the email, they also wrote, this is what he said: "As soon as I found out about the PCT, I knew that it was something I had to do in my life. Your journal represented the one flicker of brightness in my dark world. It was the one reminder that the world is a big place, the future is limitless, and I have the rest of my life to live ahead of me." And so that was pretty cool, like, to get something like that. And I can't even tell you how many emails I've gotten like that. Mm-hmm. It just makes, when I get in a tent at night and I think, I don't want to write this right now, and then I realize, wait, it's not just me that's hiking. Like, we're all hiking together, and they deserve to know what we did today.
What advice do you have for someone like me who is publicly documenting and sharing a through hike for the first time?
Just to be honest and just to shoot from what comes from your gut and to just honestly portray what's happening to you. I think that sometimes people can get caught up in editing what they might say or trying to write to a specific audience, maybe having it be more contrived. And people can feel that. They can sense it. So if you're just honest and sincere about what you're saying and doing, I think that that will come across and people will receive that. The moment that it starts to feel contrived and insincere, people are going to walk away from that and just not relate to it in any way.
What was the biggest challenge you've faced on any of your hikes?
That's a good question. I think each hike presents different challenges. So I was developmentally in a different place for each trail. So as far as my biggest challenge on a specific hike, I really have trouble with that because I think that each hike brought its own set of challenges. Overall, my biggest challenge, I think, on every trail is finding that balance between my own individual solo hike and then the interactions with the other hikers, probably, and finding that balance of without stressing myself. So that tends to be something that overwhelms me, is being around other hikers, but at the same time, it can be a benefit, and it's something that can enhance the hike. So I think for me, the biggest challenge is finding that balance and doing it in a way that is helpful for everyone involved, that you can overlap with people for a certain amount of time and spend time with them, but at the same time, have that individuality to be able to do your own thing, maybe for a few hours each day and come back together, but still benefit from each other's company, kind of thing. So I think that maybe that might have been, over the three hikes, I'm still working on that and finding a good balance and what might work for me, because I know I can benefit from interacting with others and spending and sharing the experiences with others. But my gut is to move on and to do things on my own and do it more in an individual pace. So I'm still working on that, and I think that's going to be a continued challenge for the future. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about your upcoming adventure?
I have 5 months worth of hiking coming up, and the first one's going to be on the Hayduke Trail. That's about a 2-month trail. It'll be about 800 miles through the pretty much the Utah-Arizona border and all the national parks down there. So that'll be challenging, and it'll be interesting, I'm sure. It's a trail that is unique from the others because it isn't a blazed trail. It's one that's going to be more of a route and connecting all of these different national parks together. There will be a lot of issues with long carries and water, like a lot of water carries and long food carries. And then even navigation will be interesting. And it's going to be a challenging in all aspects, mentally, physically, logistically. It's a huge challenge. So that one's going to be interesting. And then for the month of June, I will be in California doing, I'll do the Tahoe Rim Trail and then the Lost Coast Trail in the Northern California along the coast there. As I finish up June, I will also head back home to Portland and do my resupply boxes because I'm going to head over and do a 100-mile section on the Continental Divide Trail that was closed when I went through for fire, like it was closed due to fire. I'm going to end the summer with a 2-month hike in Canada that continues along the Continental Divide, and it's called the Great Divide Trail. So that's 800-ish miles along the Continental Divide in Canada. So that's the Great Divide Trail. I'm looking forward to that one probably the most. I feel like that trail is calling me, and I've wanted to do it ever since I finished the Continental Divide Trail, and I loved Glacier National Park, and that one's going to be the highlight of the summer, and I'm excited to end on the Great Divide Trail.
Do those two connect at the border?
Yes. So, and it also is the Pacific Northwest Trail. So that is the, the terminus and what do you call it? You could finish and start on all three of those trails, the Continental Divide Trail, the Pacific Northwest Trail, and the Great Divide Trail all begin from that same point or end, depending on which direction you're going.
Sure.
Yeah.
How does the PCT compare to some of the other hikes you've done? That was the first long-distance hike you did, correct?
Yeah. And I will say that I am in love with the PCT. I absolutely love it. And if I were to do one of the trails again that I've done thus far, it would be the Pacific Crest Trail. And just, I feel like it's unique in the variety that it provides, that you start in a desert, you end up in the Sierra, and then you hit the woods of Oregon and the ruggedness and remoteness of Washington. I don't feel like you get that on the other trails, and I like the variety because it changes things up. The moment you start to get a little bit antsy and feel like you've done something for too long, it changes it and you get something new. I also love that it felt like home for me. That was one trail that I didn't feel like it was trying to push me off in any way. I felt like I felt at home. When I was by myself, I just felt like it was holding me, and it just welcomes the hiker, and it's a very wide open trail that you can just walk on, and it embraces you. It's not trying to hurt you in any way, and you can just stretch your legs and go on the PCT. That's how I feel with it. I do look forward to doing that one again some year. But as far as it differs, I can't say that much longer that there's less people on the PCT than the AT, but there are relatively less people on the Pacific Crest Trail, so there's that difference, and it just gives you the views. Like, you can walk for miles and miles and miles with the most amazing views on the Pacific Crest Trail, and you do get that on the Continental Divide Trail, but oftentimes it's happening, and it comes in spurts. On the Pacific Crest Trail, I feel like consistently each day there's something happening on that trail. So you're either approaching something or you're just coming from something that was just unique and remarkable on the Pacific Crest Trail. Whereas on other trails, it may happen every 3 or 4 days, something like that. But on the PCT, I feel like it's got something each day that you can look forward to.
If you do it again, do you think there's anything you might do differently, like consider southbound?
Yes. The southbound is very interesting to me as far as the solitude that it would provide compared to the northbound trip. I feel like I did not get the PCT experience that a lot of people get because of the year that I did was a high snow year. So I am looking forward to doing that trail again, even if it is northbound, just to get the experience that most thru hikers have along the Pacific Crest Trail. Mine was a very anxiety-ridden trip approaching the Sierra, and then in the Sierra I counted 31 days between the Sierra and Northern California that I was in snow most of the day. So that took from me some of the enjoyment, but also it was beautiful. But then by the time I finished that snow section, I had a deadline to make it up to the border, and I was pushing, and I pushed through Oregon and Washington, and it felt more like I was on a mission. That whole hike was just this urgent mission to, number one, survive, and number two, to finish. And I know that the Pacific Crest Trail doesn't feel like that in a normal year. So I would like to experience it in a more relaxed version, I think. But doing it southbound is it intrigues me. So I'm 50-50 on that at the moment. But I think that trail will be done again. Yeah.
Have you ever had any gear failures that have thrown a wrench in your blogging abilities?
Oh, we'll say this one major one was that I had a solar charger on the Pacific Crest Trail, and I left a town in Northern California. And immediately upon leaving it, I didn't realize it till it was the end of the day, the solar charger, a wire on it broke. So I was unable to charge, and I had run the battery down using my phone. Unknowingly, I used it for like navigation because I was still in snow. And I got there that night, and that was a major failure. And I ended up, fortunately, near a town that I just got right back out like the next day, but it wasn't a planned stop. And I was able to get back out and fix that, but it wasn't necessarily blocking related, but that was definitely it was a charging related issue, and I was more concerned about navigation than blogging in that case. As far as anything major epic blogging fails, I'm fortunate that I haven't had any entries go missing, as far as like if I try to post something and it goes missing or anything like that. But sometimes I just have to delay the posts a few days. I can't think of anything major that would have been a crash. The apps that are used on phones these days are very frustrating, and yet the one that I use in particular has not been updated in the 4 or 5 years that I've been blogging. So it's very archaic and slow going, and I just can't wait for the day that maybe someday they will improve that and make it more streamlined so that it just happens a lot easier. Very time consuming.
What app is that?
It's not necessarily the app. Okay. It's the blog that I use. So okay. I use Blogger instead of WordPress.
Mm-hmm.
So I recommend to anyone doing a blog that do not choose Blogger, Blogspot. Don't use that. Use WordPress if you're trying to decide between the two. Much more user-friendly as far as doing blogs from the trail to use WordPress. Mm-hmm. Blogger just has not been updating it. I don't think they have an intention of updating it. And I'm kind of stuck with it because I started my blog with it, and now I have to continue using it.
Has your blogging ever helped you when you're on the trail?
Yes. So there are many perks to blogging, and that is not why I do it, but it has become a byproduct of it that has been very nice. People are very supportive along the trail, and when they're hiking with you, like I've got Walking With Wired, when they're hiking with you, they can become part of the trail and part of the experience if I'm crossing their path. So I've had some great experiences as far as people just randomly messaging me and saying, hey, I'm actually driving cross country and I'm crossing the trail at this point, and just bringing something to the trail, providing a shuttle of some sort. Just amazing things that people go and do for you. Specifically, I can just remember on the Appalachian Trail, one of the best ones I got was a couple that was willing to meet me in Maine at a cross section. And it was a long section. I was doing 7 days and I was with another hiker. And we just managed to nail it right at the time that we wanted to be there. And they met us at a cross section. And knowing that I like Subway and that I like milkshakes and that kind of thing, they did bring, it was fully equipped. We were there. They had lawn chairs sitting there. You had to sit there and sit in chairs and just relax. And they brought Subway for me. And they brought pink lemonade, which I love. And then the milkshakes. And then they had us leave with burgers. Like, so it was just great to do that. And then they ended up meeting us the next town. They were still in town, and I got there like 3 days later, and they met us the next town and shuttled us into town, and then offered to pay for our hotel room when we got to the hotel. People are just so supportive. They're thankful for the blog, and they do things that are just very kind as a thank you for it. And they just want to be supportive, and it's been very helpful. It's also helpful when, for me, the blog has provided great, I don't know what kind of moments you would say, if they're called kismet moments or whatever, where you just randomly would come across somebody because of the blog that you wouldn't normally come across. So it might be somebody that I just took a hitch with, and I would have never seen them again, but then they came across the blog later, and it turns out that it's somebody that was able to communicate with me down trail and do more things with me, and that we've kept in touch all these years. As far as my most recent hikes, I posted on my website like months ago what I wanted to do this year. I was doing it, I posted it like a good 3 or 4 months before I knew I was leaving, but I was doing all these trips solo. And as soon as I posted it, it only took less than a month, maybe two, that I ended up having people to hike with me on all these remote trails now. And these would have never come up had I not posted them on the blog and people read about it publicly. So I think that it's really brought the community for me. It's been more communal because of the blog, that I'm not only hiking with the people that are on the trail, but it's bringing together like the whole community that is surrounding the trail.
That's great. Last weekend, I had the privilege of getting to see your presentation at the American Long Distance Hiking Association West out of Cascade Locks. How much has doing those kinds of presentations become a part of your sharing of your experience with people?
Oh, that has just been wonderful. And that's something that people, I don't think, put enough weight in. That, and where this came from for me is that when I was learning to do the Pacific Crest Trail and I was training, I would go to the stores or I'd be out on the trail and I'd cross somebody who did do the Pacific Crest Trail. I had done a long trail and I'd say, how was that? What was it like? And they'd be like, oh, it was okay. It was nice. And then they would leave it at that and they wouldn't elaborate on it. And knowing how I felt at that time, that I wanted to hear the stories and I wanted to hear what it felt like to hike and to have somebody who was actually hiking or had just finished hiking to just say, it was okay. It was fine. And I knew they were holding back. I knew they were. And it was something that I needed, and it fed me and it gave me this hope and excitement about the trail that I just decided I was going to pay it forward. Like, I was going to do one presentation and when I got back from the Pacific Crest Trail, and that ended up going so well that it just built from there, that someone was there that gave me the contacts to the other ones in this area. And as I've done more, I've gotten more regulars that I do each year. So it's almost become a regular routine that I already have it set up that which ones I'm going to do next fall if I were to complete the ones that I'm going to do this year. But to be able to reach out to people and actually give them that experience and talk to them about it, because not everyone can sit down and read the whole blog. But if I can stand up in front of people for an hour and give them a 5-month experience of what it was like on the blog and have them feel that, it has done so much for both me and the audience that it just gives so much to both of us that it makes it worth it. People ask me, how much do you get paid for those? And they're shocked when I tell them that, because the effort and time that I put into them and the energy that it takes for me to do them, I call it a presentation hangover the next day, is that it's quite draining on me to do them. And I put a lot of time into the presentation, but I don't get paid for the majority of them. So very few of them pay for that. And to me, it's just totally worth doing that, knowing that I know what it's giving to the audience. And that was what I needed when I was thinking about hiking, and that I just want to be able to give people that experience and to know what it feels like. So it's just been very rewarding to do those presentations.
When you did your first hike on the PCT, did you ever envision that it would lead to an ongoing series of through hikes and adventures?
Absolutely not. I didn't even think I would finish the Pacific Crest Trail. Like, I got out there and I thought, oh, maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks. And then it just kept going 1 week after the other. And then the blog just kept building. And even when I finished the Pacific Crest Trail, I thought, I'm never doing that again. That was a one-time hiccup in life. Mm-hmm. And that it wasn't something that was supposed to happen. I hadn't earned it yet. And I felt like I needed to retire and work like another 25 years or so before I could hike another trail. And it just evolved into something bigger. Like, over that next year, I tried to take off and it just kept coming back. When I went on a trail that I took the next summer and I did all the smaller trails, I did one in Canada, I did a lot in the Oregon area, and then I did the John Muir Trail again so I could see it without snow. And each time I went on one of those trails, someone would come up to me randomly and say, you're wired. Like, I followed your blog and this is what it did. And what are you doing next? And that kind of thing. And it just really, it brought home for me, even a year later, I was on the trails and I was in these trails that were not the Pacific Crest Trail, and people were randomly recognizing and telling me what the blog did for them. So that really sunk in for me, and I thought, well, you know what? Maybe I can keep doing this. So it's really been something that I never imagined happening, and it's shocking to me that it has happened so quickly and that it just kind of snowballed into this kind of a thing. So I like to say I'm riding the wave at this point. So it's been a good ride. I don't know that I'll be doing it the rest of my life, and I'm just taking it one season at a time. So right now it's great and it's wonderful, and it's something that I can do that, it's a reason for getting up in the morning, and it also is something that's helping me to feel like I'm contributing to the greater society, because that's important to me in life, that I'm doing something that doesn't just selfishly impact me, but something that can help others. So, the blog has surprisingly done that for me in a way that if I were just hiking by myself, I'm sure these trails would not mean as much to me as they do now that I'm able to share it with so many people and bring this world to so many people.
Have you had any negative encounters or experiences because of your blog?
Fortunately, I've been very, I would say lucky, I guess, that everything's been very positive. I know that following somebody on a blog, especially a woman, can be dangerous, and I do take precautions for that, and those are my own precautions for me to know that I take.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very aware of it, and I don't take it for granted, and I'm not naive, so I will put that out there. I'm not naive about that. But I would say one thing that it probably does is that I think people might have a preconceived notion about me as they're approaching me that, oh, and already think that they know something about you, or that maybe that's like somebody who they don't want to hike around because of the fact that they're a blogger and that they may write about them or something like that. So there's a little bit of that that's involved. And I think that some people also can come up and think that you may have an impression of yourself and that there may be a persona that comes along with it before people even meet you. So that's what I think is a little bit can be a drawback to the hiking, is that a lot of times people may come up with already some preconceived notion of you or have some experience or have heard something of you or that kind of thing, whereas I'm meeting them for the first time and it feels almost unfair they're not meeting me for the first time. It feels that way at different times. It can go both ways, positively and negatively, but I do think that some people would prefer not to hike around somebody who's like a blogger that's putting the trail out in the public. And I completely understand that. But I do think that that may have an impact on some of the people that have hiked around me and have chosen to hike with or not hike with me. So there's definitely people who I think may be stuck around longer than they normally would have because there can be some perks, as I've mentioned, to the blogging. So sometimes those perks are things that people might want to stick around for. So there's also that whole figuring out who's sincerely around me and who is around me because of the fact that I'm blogging and that there might be something that comes along with that.
Have there been any times you've been scared for your life on the trail?
I had one day on the Pacific Crest Trail that was probably my most frightening day. And that was when it was a high snow year and there was, and I'm a realistic person that does not over-dramatize things, and the snow was just really high, and I was coming to the highest crossing known in the Sierra, which was Bear Creek. And when I was getting there, the guys that I was hiking with, we had hit some dry trail in the morning, and they got excited and tried to make a ferry. They were trying to catch a ferry for a boat to get to one of their family members was there with hot dogs on the other side. So they ran on ahead. And I thought they were joking when they said they were going on ahead, so I just figured I'd see them at the top of the next pass. And when I didn't see them, I was like, wait, they weren't joking. And I ended up doing a full day, and I thought this was really good for myself, but I ended up doing a full day by myself. At the time, it wasn't enjoyable. By myself in the snow and crossing the Bear Creek crossing without anybody else to hold on to. And that, to me, I was shaking, and I had to self-arrest going over a pass, and it turned out that I was just going the wrong way over the pass, and it was actually a cliffside that I was going over. But the guys had been ahead of me, and they had put those footprints through there, so I was blindly just going through it because they were the only footprints I saw, and I didn't even double check to see that I was going the wrong way. So that scared me because it was a lake at the bottom. I self-arrested as I was going down, I could see I would have landed in an ice-cold lake full of, like, it was all snow. Mm-hmm. And so there was that. And then doing that crossing of Bear Creek was, that was really frightening. I mean, that was one that I couldn't even put my legs down without flying backwards. And I just had to keep trying different places until I got there. And so I have to say that stretch on the PCT where all the water was happening, I had more of those life-threatening moments of, like, what was I thinking and shaking and adrenaline go through me than I've ever had in my whole life combined. But with the other trails, they were all pretty tame. Nothing too serious as far as life-threatening kind of stuff.
Any great animal encounters out there?
Not too many great ones. I wish I've been trying to see a bear, like a grizzly bear.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a lot of stories to be told of just barely eluding a bear and just barely missing it. And I've had a lot of those. So I'd wake up real early on the Continental Divide up in Glacier, and I'd walk by myself, and I'd walk quietly, and I could see the footprints, and I knew I was going to see a bear, and I was so excited. It was only my last week, and I was just a few days away, and I was hiking with another hiker, and her boyfriend was behind us catching up. And we were hiking, and we were like, this is it. We could see the droppings, we could see footprints, and we could see down a valley. We said, this is the day we're going to see a grizzly bear. And we just kept coming around each turn real quiet and kind of peeking around and waiting for that bear. And like a couple hours later, her boyfriend caught up to us, and he tends to hike in the front, and he went on to the front. And within 10 minutes, I kid you not, within 10 minutes of him coming with us, I turn a corner and he goes, and I just barely see like a black thing just move in a bush, just a tiny color of it. And he turned around and he goes, oh my God, did you see it? And I was like, and he goes, it was a huge grizzly. It was sitting right on the trail. It was huge and just bolted. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, that was our grizzly. Like the two of us approached. He said, that was our bear. That was our bear. You took our bear. So I've had a lot of those. I was same situation of a moose in Maine. I missed it by like 5 minutes, and the person in front of me saw it. And so same thing. And I saw a porcupine in a tree in New Mexico. It was Colorado. I was in Colorado, and a porcupine was in a tree. And I'd never seen one before, and I thought it was a sloth. It was huge. And it was just hanging there. And I'm like, sloths are not in the U.S. And I thought it was a sloth. but yeah, no major animal things other than that. Pretty much it.
I recently got to watch the new hiking movie Flip Flop Flipped by Squatch, which you were in. How was that experience for you?
Yeah, it was interesting to be on video versus writing, and then also like this being on audio, because I cringe at both seeing myself on video and hearing my own voice. So that was interesting, and it was cool to see it from that side of things. And to spend time with Squatch was great, because Squatch does such a great job with his movies of focusing on the people around him. His movies are not about him, per se, but it's framed work around him, and it's the experience that he's having. So I very much can relate to the way Squatch does his films, because like mine is walking with Wired, and his is pretty much his hike through his eyes, what he's seeing and the people he's meeting. And I like that he focuses on the hikers and the interactions that you have and the way you see so many people and you have so many different interactions. So that was really fun to be part of that and work with Squatch on that one, because he gives that feeling of what it is like on a through hike, that you might see somebody at one point and then 2 weeks later you see them again. Or maybe you may not see them again, but you'll be in contact with them through like email and texting, and you'll find out what happened with them later. And how one person might tell a story, but then it connects to somebody else like weeks later. I think he does a good job of capturing that kind of thing when he does his movies. So that was fun. It was really fun to do that movie with Squatch.
I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the podcast and talk with me. I know your time is limited here. Thanks for sharing everything that you do online.
Thank you. Good luck with this podcast. It's a great idea.
Thank you.
I think that people are going to really enjoy this.
And that's a wrap for episode 2. Really, from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank all of you for listening. Please don't hesitate to comment on the website, email me, get in touch with me, find Trailside Radio on Twitter or Facebook. Reach out and let me know what you think. I've already got some great content lined up for episode 3, and by the end of April, these episodes will be coming to you directly from the Pacific Crest Trail, as I challenge myself to make it all the way from Mexico to Canada. Thanks once again. Trailside Radio, over and out.